Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
June 20th, 2006, a Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, image editing workflow. Well, regardless of what type of image editor you use, whether you're using something such as Photoshop Elements for Mac or Windows, or using iPhoto on the Mac, or using CS2 for Windows or Mac, or you're using Lightroom, you're using Aperture, you need some kind of workflow to go from point A to point B once you upload your pictures to your computer. I've been getting some reader mail lately on the subject, and people are going, can you just kind of help me with, you know, step A, step B, step C, to help me kind of refine my own personal workflow. So I think that's a great idea, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And I'm going to jump right in. Now, I'll tell you right now that even though this will work for any image editor, in the back of my mind, I do have Photoshop Elements or Photoshop CS or, you know, Photoshop 7 for that matter. Those are sort of the images that are in my head when I'm talking about image editing. That doesn't mean that you have to use those particular applications for what I'm doing. Just so you know, that's kind of what I'm thinking. You could use Graphic Converter or any number of applications. But in the back of my head, I'm thinking Photoshop today. Now, I also want to say that this is one of the reasons why these new applications such as LightZone and Aperture and Lightroom are coming to life, because manufacturers and camera makers and all those folks have realized that this is not easy, even for serious photographers, to, you know, put together a workflow with these different sorts of tools that they have on their computer. And these environments have come about because, you know, you want to be able to do sort of everything in one box. Here's the thing, though. Not everyone wants to go out and buy Aperture or buy LightZone, or when Lightroom is available for sale, are going to want to buy that. There are a number of people who say, look, you know, I'm okay. I'm organizing my photos on my hard disk. I have an image editor. I'm not shooting, you know, hundreds of pictures a day. I just sort of want a nice little process that I can use without having to go out and buy more stuff. And that's kind of where I'm coming from today. So where do you begin? Well, once the pictures are on my hard drive from my camera, I like to have some way to look at them. And, you know, again, iPhoto or one of those applications is handy for that, but you don't necessarily need it. For instance, in Windows, you can just use basically the file browser and you get thumbnails of images that you've just uploaded, and you get the file numbers with them, and, you know, off you go. And in a Mac, you can, for instance, grab a handful of images, you know, highlight them just by dragging the cursor around or whatever, and drop them on the preview application, and it'll go boom, 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 and load them all up for you, and you can get a peek at them. So you don't need, you know, one of these integrated photo editing environments to do this, but you do need some way to be able to look at all your shots. Now, once you do, you want to pick the shots that you're going to want to do a little bit more work with. You know, out of every shoot, let's say out of every 100 images that you shoot, there's probably going to be 3 or 4 or 5 that you really want to kind of work and make prints of or share with other people or put on your website. So go ahead and note those image numbers so that you know which shots you're going to work on. So that's step one. You got to know what you're going to do, right? You got to know what you're going to work on. You got to know, hey, this is a better shot than this shot. Now, some people like to, when they do discover a good shot, and again, when they're not working in an integrated photo environment, they will add a little something to the file name, like 1 star or 2 stars or 3 stars. That's not a bad idea, it's not a bad idea to somehow indicate this shot is better than the rest of them, so that later on, when you look at that folder of images, you go, oh yeah, these are the good ones, these ain't. Okay, so that's step one, which is know what you're going to work on. Now, the next thing that I like to do is crop. I think that cropping, you know, before you do image editing itself, and what I mean by image editing, I mean exposure adjustment, things like that, I like to really know what shot, what the shot's going to look like in terms of composition. So let's say we have our five favorites right now that we want to work on. Next thing I'm going to do is open them up in my favorite image editor. And again, that can be Photoshop Elements, CS2, Graphic Converter, whatever you're working with. And play with it in terms of cropping. Now, cropping is interesting because there's cropping just for the composition itself, right? This is the best looking shot. And it could be some kind of weird, you know, super rectangular crop that you really like. And then there's cropping for output. And for instance, if you know that you're going to make a 5x7 or an 8x10 out of your printer, or you're going to order one, then you might want to think about that at the cropping stage. Now, almost every image editor has something called the constrain tool. And what the constrain tool allows you to do is you choose, constrain my cropping area to 5x7 proportions, or to 8x10 proportions, or to 11x14 proportions. And then that way, when you drag the cursor across your image, the box that it makes, right, which is going to be your cropping area or your cropped area, is to those proportions. That will save you a lot of headache later on when you go to make print. So if you know ahead of time that you're going to be doing output to a printer and you're going to be printing on a specific size of paper, use that constrain tool when you make your crop. Now, one thing, this is where you start to get into versioning, right? Because if you know you're going to make an 8x10, but you also want to make a 5x7, then you're actually talking about two different files and two different proportions. And sometimes you might want to have save as and have two different files crop these two different ways. Of course, when you're using something like Aperture or Lightroom, this is not an issue because it's not actually cropping them, it's just applying instructions to them. But again, we're working in a more kind of basic way here, and you might have to have multiple files, something to keep in mind. So step one is crop it so that it looks good, and if you know what your output's going to be, then crop it to those proportions. My next step is to adjust the exposure. And typically, I do that with the levels adjustment. Now, in the world of image editing, there are two basic camps. One camp loves curves and curves adjustments. And the other camp really likes levels. And then there's kind of a third camp, the unspoken camp, which says, well, levels is really great for contrasty prints and curves really good for flat prints. Everyone's right, right? I mean, there's no absolute rule. There's not an exposure Bible somewhere hidden that we don't know about that actually states which tool to use in what situation. Generally speaking, I like levels control. I think it's the best all-around tool, although there are times when I'll use curves. For the sake of this discussion today, though, let's open up the levels commands and make a few adjustments. Every levels dialog box will give you a histogram. It's usually a luminance histogram, which means it's just one color. It's usually like a dark colored, looks like a mountain, you know, in a graph box. And that's actually a really easy view to work with things. And then it will have three little pointers. There'll be a pointer at the right end, on the right side, and that's for your brightness adjustment. There'll be another little pointer, a little triangle on the left side, and that's for, you know, your shadows and your dark areas. And then there'll be one in the middle, and that's your gamma or your midtones. what, you know, the general rule of thumb is, so you have this histogram, this little mountain shaped, which is portraying the all the different values in your photograph. And what you want to do is, on the right side, you want to take your bright, you know, your highlights pointer, and move it just to the edge of the histogram, where the histogram starts. On the left side, for your shadow detail, same thing. Take that pointer and move it right to the edge where the histogram starts on the left side. Now what you've said is that you're using all the values in your photograph. Okay, everything is accounted for. Once you do that, then you go to the middle. What's the middle? What the heck is that? The middle triangle, which is your gamma or your midtones, and then adjust that to taste. You know, in other words, you know, say, okay, I've got my highlights and my shadows taken care of. I know that they're going to be represented correctly. Now I'm just going to adjust those midtones till I get the shot the way I want. And then once you do, hit okay, and you've essentially made your exposure or your levels adjustment. This will work 90% of the time. It's really a great way to go. If you have a preview box while you're in the levels dialog box, you can check it and uncheck it to see how the photograph originally looked and then how it looks after your corrections. It's going to be better every time. Really nice. So the next step, the second step, is to do your levels adjustment. Now you're ready to do a little color balancing. You want to do the exposure first and then the color balancing afterwards, because it really doesn't do, in my opinion, any good to do color balancing if the exposure is off. So you get the exposure the way that you want, and now you go to color balance. And there are a couple different ways that you can do this. Now, I would say that the color balance dialog box is a little bit more tricky than cropping or levels adjustment. Most of the time, when you adjust color balance or in temperature and so forth, you'll be dealing with three sliders, and they represent kind of the three different channels. And I'm going to launch Photoshop here. Actually, it's launched, but I'm just going to take a look at to make sure I get this right, because there's nothing worse than giving bad information in a podcast. I tell you, people will just they will just not forgive you forever. They'll go, oh man, you know, that guy used to be good, and then he messed up the discussion on the color balance dialog box, and now, you know what, I just really don't have time for him anymore. Okay, so I'm getting it right. So I'm actually looking at the color balance dialog box in Photoshop right now. And so the three sliders have like cyan on the one slider, has the top slider has cyan on one side and red on the other, and a slider in between. And then you have magenta and green, that's the other pairing, and then yellow and blue, and that's the third pairing. And sometimes you can do this for midtones and highlights and shadows. So you can see where this sort of gets kind of mind-boggling, right? This is sort of not fun unless you're the type that really likes these sort of things. So what I do is I start out by trying the auto color balance first. And almost every image editor has that. So try auto color first and see how it looks. I would say that probably about 70% of the time, auto color works. And that's really cool. If your auto color hopeful, cross your fingers, please work so I don't have to do the other thing, adjustment doesn't perform the way that you want, then you will have to open up the color balance dialog box and play with these sliders. Now, generally speaking, what I discover is that photos tend to be either kind of warm or kind of cool. Most often, my experience is they tend to be on the cool side when you're shooting indoors and in shade and things like that. And they tend to be a little too warm when you're shooting at sunset or early in the morning and times like that. So generally speaking, you're really only doing kind of a basic color adjustment, you know, sort of the warm, cool kind of thing. And it would be nice if we just had warm, cool correction. But we don't always have that. So what you can do is that the cyan and the blue in your color balance dialog box represent the cool, and the red and the yellow represent the warm. And the red and cyan are on the top bar, and the blue and the yellow are on the bottom slider. The middle slider I usually don't mess with much, the magenta green, because it's rare that I have a problem in that area. So you can start in the mid-tones. If the photograph is too cool, then maybe move it 5 over toward red on the top slider, 5 over toward yellow on the bottom slider. Do it for also shadows and highlights if necessary. And, you know, you'll get better at analyzing the photo. Sometimes, you know, the highlights are fine. Sometimes the highlights really show, you know, this over coolness or this over warmth, and you want to make, you know, only that adjustment, and you don't need to mess with the middle tones or, you know, the shadow areas. So that, you know, there's a little bit of playing around with it here. But main thing is to sort of understand the cool warm situation. And conversely, if your image is too warm, then, you know, then you'll move your sliders over toward cyan and over toward blue. And again, you usually don't have to do a whole lot, just, you know, 5-6 units in each direction. You'll be surprised just by playing with and watching the preview how close you can come to getting your photo in a much better color balance situation. Now, of course, you want to start with autocolor. If it doesn't work, then, you know, you can try what I just outlined here. But I'll tell you one thing right now. Be patient when you're working with color balance, because it's something that you really do have to develop an eye for, and it takes a little bit of time, and most people don't get it right away. It's rare when people have, you know, expertise at color balance the first few times they open the dialog box. So make sure you're patient with yourself while you're working on this one. Now the final step is sharpening. And sharpening is always the last thing you want to do before you save out your photo. And that's because if you sharpen early and then you make a lot of other changes to the pixels with exposure and color balance, you're going to sort of void your sharpening, and you'll have to do it again. And then you can end up with, you know, an over-sharpened photograph. So sharpening is at the very end of the process. Now I'm going to open up my Photoshop image again here on my screen to make sure that I explain sharpening correctly. Again, you know, I don't want to lose you. I don't want you to say, hey, you know, this guy just doesn't know anything. I'm never listening to his podcast again. So I'm actually having Photoshop open right now. And in CS, of course, sharpen is under the filters, and you go to filter, and you go to sharpen, and then use unsharp mask if your image editor has it. I think it's the most elegant amount of sharpening. Now, when you open it up in regular Photoshop, the defaults are usually 50% for the amount. You're usually often looking at 3 sliders, and radius will usually be at 1 pixel or so. Now, people, I have to tell you, write books about this dialog box and about sharpening, and people disagree a lot about how to use it. So whatever I say right now, there are people who will be able to argue with me on this. And I tend to be pretty conservative on sharpening. I mean, that's the first thing I'm going to say, is I don't go crazy with sharpening, because I think an over-sharpened photo looks very digital, and I don't think it's the best way to go. So I tend to, you know, not sharpen any more than I have to. And I usually only really mess with the top two settings, the amount and the radius. So radius at 1 pixel, which is often the middle setting, 1 pixel is a good place to start. And then what I do from there is I will usually slide the amount slider in between 10 and 50 and see how my image looks, you know, as I have preview. If I'm not getting the effect that I want, if I'm not getting enough sharpening effect, then I'll go back to my radius slider and I'll move it up to 2. Two radius, 2 pixels, and then I'll play with the amount slider again. And this is sort of the process that I use, is start with a conservative radius and then work up as you need it. Now, if you really want to sharpen a lot, I mean, you can bump your radius up to, 20, 30 or so. And that's going to give you a pretty strong effect on sharpening. So again, I tend to be more conservative with that. Start with radius at a couple pixels, one or two or three, and then play with the amount slider, see how it looks, and go from there. Once you do your sharpening, I'm going to go ahead and cancel out of this right now. Once you take care of your sharpening, then I think that's a good time to save as. Not save, but save as. Because you have just created an edited version of your original image that you captured. And so you've cropped, you've done exposure adjustment, you've done color adjustment, and now you've sharpened. And then save as and create a file name. And it could be, for instance, the same file name that you had before, but just an underscore edit, just to let you know that this is the edited version of my original image. Now, as I've talked before, I think it's a pretty good idea to keep that same image number so you can match these up. So, for instance, if your file name is img_1022.jpg, that's your original file name, and now you have an edited version where you've cropped and exposure adjusted, color balanced, and sharpened, then I would do img_1022_edit. And of course, if you've cropped to a certain proportion, you might also want to do _5x7, just so you know that you've just cropped it to 5x7 proportions. Try to keep your master image, your original image that you uploaded from your camera, pristine and unedited. You always want to be able to go back to that image in its original form, if you want to reinterpret the photograph. And every time that you do that, every time that you reinterpret the photograph, then you save as and save it as, keep the image number if you can, and then add the description from there. Now, one thing that people ask me, when I save as, after I've edited, do I save it as a JPEG, if it started out as a JPEG? Or do I save it as a Photoshop file or a TIFF file? And that's really up to you. If you don't think you're going to be doing a lot of editing on it, after you do your original edits, you can save it as a JPEG to keep the file size down. And there's no problem with that. Now, when you save as JPEG, you get to save at a quality setting, right? That's between 0 and 12 most of the time, with 12 being the highest quality. I recommend that you save at least 10 or 11, because that higher quality is really worth having in your image. And the file size isn't that much bigger than if you save it at more of a medium file size, or more of a medium quality setting, such as 5 or 6. So go ahead and save at JPEG if you don't think you're going to be doing a lot more editing on it, and you can save it at 10 or 11. However, this procedure changes a little bit if you think you're going to go back and be doing more edits to it. Because, of course, the way that JPEG compression works is that you can open and close the file as many times as you want, and there's no image loss. It's when you make a change to the file, when you do an image edit, then when you save it again or close it, then the JPEG will be recompressed, and that's where you get image loss. So if you don't think you're going to be editing it much more, JPEG is fine because you're not going to be doing really compressing and recompressing. However, if you think you're going to continue to fiddle with the file, make a little exposure adjustment here, a little color balance there, then we're back at our, what file type do I save it as? So after I've made my set of image adjustments, then I would consider saving it as a Photoshop file or a TIFF file. I kind of like Photoshop files myself. The reason being that even though the file size is a little bit bigger, you can go back and edit again and edit again and edit again, and you won't introduce any image loss in that process. The Photoshop file format is lossless, as is TIFF, if you don't compress. So if you know, that's sort of the decision. If I'm not going to be doing a lot of editing on this file now that I've made my basic adjustments, JPEG is great, it keeps the file size smaller. But if I do think I'm going to be dinking around with it some more, then you might want to go Photoshop file format when you save it. Okay, so I just want to walk back through this procedure really quickly one more time, and then I'll get to a little digital story news and so forth. Again, so you know, you open your images that you've just uploaded from your camera, and by hook or crook, by whatever way that you use, you want to find the best ones, and you want to somehow mark them. You know, you can add a star or whatever to that. And you don't have to open them to do that. You can just, you know, change the, you know, just click on the file name and add some sort of marker so that you know these are your best ones. Then when you open them up in your image editor, start by cropping. And remember, if you know what your output size is going to be later on, use the constraint tool when you crop so that it's cropped proportionally for whatever you're going to do, printing on 5x7 or whatever. After you crop, do your exposure adjustment. And most of the time, I recommend using the levels command. I think it's the easiest to use, and it gives you good results almost every time. After that, you want to do a little color balance if necessary. It may or may not. You may look at the shot and go, it's perfectly fine. You can skip that step. But if you think it's a little too warm or a little too cool, you want to do a little color balancing. Start by trying the auto color balance tool. A lot of times that will do it for you. If not, you'll have to open the color balance dialog box and play with those sliders. You know, and one tip for Photoshop users, they have this other command called variations. So if you're having a hard time color balancing, find that variations command. It's under the adjustments menu, and it'll show you representations and thumbnails of warmer and cooler versions of that shot. All you gotta do is click on the thumbnail that you like and off you go. So that's an alternative for color balancing. Once you do color balancing, you'll probably have to do a little bit of sharpening. Start conservative, you know, keep that radius and that amount at the lower ends unless you really feel like the shot needs a little bit more sharpening, and then you can bump those up a bit. Once you do your sharpening, once you apply it, then you do save as another file. I would put underscore edit so that you know that you've edited the file, and then keep the edited file and the master file within reach so that if you want to go back to the original to reinterpret the photo, you can. So that's the basic procedure. That's my basic nuts and bolts for image editing almost everything that I do. Okay, now let's do just a little digital story news. First thing I want to mention is that all the slideshows are in for the showcase, and the display date when I let the world know about these things is going to be June 27th. So it's a week away. I'm doing the final judging and getting them ready, and there's actually a fair amount of work on getting that page together, but it's really going to be worth it. And so mark June 27th on your calendar, probably about midday or so. That's when that page is going to go up on the digital story. If you entered the slideshow showcase, hopefully your slideshow will be there. Not everyone's will be there. We actually had a pretty good turnout, but I am picking what we consider to be the 10 best, and they will be there. So cross your fingers that yours shows up on that page if you entered. And if you didn't enter, I really encourage you to take a look at these presentations because they're really good. And they're a great example of how you can show off your work using this particular medium. So Slideshow Showcase goes up on the 27th. Now, I also do a podcast that day. And what I'll do then is we're going to go back to regular photo assignments for the month of July. And I'll talk about what the theme for that photo assignment is. And hopefully you can, if you have been kind of sitting tight waiting for the slideshow thing to, you know, work through its process, when you're ready to enter a still photo, we're going to have a regular photo assignment for July, and I'll announce that in the June 27th podcast. The grab shots have been coming in nicely too. now that I've sort of worked through a lot of this stuff, you know, we've had a lot of business to take care of on the site. Hopefully I can pick up the pace on the grab shots a little bit. Also, keep sending them in. And even if, you know, I rarely write back and say thank you for sending it in, I usually don't let people know about the grab shot until I actually publish it. So if you send one in and you don't hear anything back, don't worry. I have it. I've looked at it. Chances are I like it. It's just a matter of working it into the queue. When I do publish it, I'll let you know. I'll send you an email and say, hey, your grab shot's up. Go take a look at it. It's, you know, it's fabulous. So that will take care of the business for today. Overall, I just have to say, you know, we're in great shape right now. There's a lot of participation, a lot of mail. We got great slideshows. We can get the photo assignments going again. We have grab shots rolling in. Email has been great. Comments have been a little light lately, but I think that's partly my fault because we're sort of working on the back end of the website. And sometimes when you enter a comment and you hit the submit button, it seems like it takes a long time for it to work through. That's because it is taking a long time. And we're actually going to change servers and beef up our server side of the equation. I should have that done in another few weeks. And that'll make that whole process of submitting a comment easier. I'll let you know when we do that because I really would like a little bit more conversation on the grab shots and the other posts that I put up. So we're working on the back end, and hopefully that'll be cleaned up in a few weeks, and things will be slightly more perky. All right. Well, that's a lot to digest for 1 week. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll be back next week with another show. Lots happening at the end of June here, so stay tuned and keep coming by the site. Thanks. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.